Joe Burrow and Tua. So many young quarterbacks with an opportunity to get to play and see how long and what their impact will be on the NFL. And joining us right out of the gate, legendary quarterback from the Washington Redskins, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, and kind enough to make time for us here today, Joe Theismann. Joe, it's always great to catch up and really looking forward to talking the draft with you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was an exciting 3 days. I don't watch the draft normally that much, but I was very curious, like everybody else, who was going to go where. And it looked to me like a lot of football teams got people they wanted.
I believe so. And I think at the beginning of the draft, it was going to start at number three. I think at one point, and I know you spoke highly of Zach Wilson, it was funny because they put a picture of him and Sam Darnold, and it looked like they went from one. It's like when the teenage daughter moves up from one boy band to another, but they're both really good. And, you know, Zach Wilson, he has that confidence, that swag. The only thing against him would be the competition, but that's really more of prove it later down the road, not his fault. He can only play who his schedule's against. But number three, Joe, that was a big pick. You know a lot about the San Francisco 49ers and a team that you look at with Trey Lance. Now, this is a guy that has taken less snaps than any quarterback ever drafted in the first round, only really played a season in a couple games. What did you think of that move, and do you see him being an impact player?
Well, first of all, it speaks volumes to the fact that there are teams desperate for quarterbacks. Not that it was a desperate pick, but there just aren't a lot of quality, you know, evaluated individuals coming out of college. And Trey Lance happened to be a guy who, in all likelihood, will wind up sitting behind Jimmy Garoppolo, because if San Francisco drafted Mac Jones, you basically have the same quarterback you have in Jimmy Garoppolo. And so now you have someone who's a bit more athletic, a bigger, strong arm kind of guy. And I think they're hoping that he becomes a Josh Allen type of football player like they have in Buffalo. Didn't have a lot of, I mean, the competition wasn't that great at Wyoming. No knock on anybody who happens to be from there, but a little bit different than in some conferences. And I think it's a chance for him to be able to sit a little bit. Jimmy's their quarterback. I mean, it's that simple. Kyle's system is a complex system to run. Trey hasn't played a lot of football, and it's going to be a different world. The speed level from college to professional is amazing. The quickness of the athletes, the quickness of the defensive linemen, the way the defensive back close on the ball. So many things are different to get used to. And you know, now they're going to give him a chance to be able to grow into it. And I think it's a good thing for him. Absolutely. I mean, there's no real necessity to rush him out on the football field other than what you see in Zach Wilson and, of course, Trevor Lawrence. Those guys are expected to play right away.
Yeah, Joe, Drew here. And I think so. To me, it seems like this, the whole Trey Lance to San Francisco thing, and for the reasons that you just mentioned, it's almost like the perfect match because, as said before, Kyle Shanahan's like, Jimmy is our guy, and this gives the opportunity for them to keep Jimmy and just see what he can do this year while also allowing Trey Lance to understand and get used to the speed of the game and the difference that there is from, you know, not just the FBS to the NFL, but the FCS to the NFL and the opposition that he has played. It seems like this is the perfect opportunity for him to grow as a player and maybe in a year or two be ready whenever the 49ers are ready to move on from Jimmy.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You make a great point. And one other aspect of it is when people talk about trading quarterbacks, like San Francisco, they're going to trade Jimmy. What's your option? You know, this is the thing you have to look at. When you hear conversations about somebody being traded, San Francisco was in a Super Bowl a couple of years ago with Jimmy Garoppolo as their quarterback. Now, all of a sudden, you're going to get rid of him. And can you name the backup now in San Francisco?
No, was it Mullins?
Well, it's either Mullins or it was Beathard, but I think it's Mullins. But either way, that's not a good option.
Both of them are gone.
Okay.
Well, then, no, I can't.
Well, no, it may be Debo running a wishbone. I don't know.
So it's Trey Lance. So, you know, that's what's interesting, because when people start talking about, well, let's do it, what about this guy, what about that guy? The Green Bay Packers, if it hadn't been for a mental lapse by a defensive back, they probably could have been in the Super Bowl a year ago. You know, I mean, that was a big play at the end of the half.
Yep.
And you've got Aaron Rodgers, who was unhappy. And trust me, Aaron Rodgers' unhappiness is seated in a year ago when they drafted Jordan Love. That's where it goes back to. Not that they drafted a quarterback, but I think they had other needs on that football team as Aaron saw it, and they didn't go in a direction where he felt like it helped him and the football team. And they made a decision towards the future. Now, when you have, and you could similarly say, well, Jimmy Garoppolo is not happy because they drafted, you know, Trey Lance. But the bottom line is they need to. You know, you're looking at contracts that are getting outrageous. Classic example, the Minnesota Vikings. Do you know what Kirk Cousins' numbers are for these next 2 years?
Oh, is
21
he,
and 22.
I think it's a, isn't it? Is it up to 31
million? Yeah, 31 million guaranteed in 21, 45 million guaranteed in 22. Now, I mean, that's the agent you want.
yeah, you talk about
forget
MVPs.
About
yeah, some of these contracts. Forget I remember
about the players.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But what do you, I mean, you know, and now, you take a look at what you know. Dak got a $40 million contract. Kurtz is going to be in 2 years. Going to be at $40 million. What is Aaron Rodgers worth? The first thing I would do with Aaron Rodgers. And I believe that this year he has a guaranteed contract. For 22 and 23 are not guaranteed. First thing I do is I give him a raise and I guarantee the contract. Because he's going to be he stays on the field. He's not a herder. They're not going to get where they want to get to without him at this stage. You're going to wind up playing a kid who hasn't played any football. And Aaron is special. He's the greatest pure passer the game of football has ever seen. There have been guys who can throw it hard. There have been guys who can spin it. There have been guys who have been extremely accurate. And there's guys that have very quick releases. Different individuals have some of those elements. Aaron has them all. I mean, I could sit and watch him flick the football around all day long. I mean, when I was studying film, if I was looking at a team, I would just watch him throw the football. And see, he wasn't that kind of thrower in college. His release and delivery and everything has changed over time, which only tells you that guys can get better if they want to apply themselves. But, you know, when you talk about the draft being in the San Francisco being the interesting one, it is from a pick standpoint. You knew they were going to go quarterback. The one that I thought was going to be the sort of the linchpin was going to be Atlanta at four. Who was going to try and get up and get somebody at four? And would Atlanta want to make the move? Not that they were going to get a quarterback. But they took the right player. That's what I'm saying. I think this draft, people got what they wanted in this draft. They targeted players. Their boards were set up, and it looked like a lot of people filled the voids that they had and the needs that they felt like they had, and they came off the board in the order they were supposed to.
Well, I think the most interesting thing, too, and I think Chad and I talked about it a little bit, but that trade that Denver made to get Teddy Bridgewater, I know that they had said that they wanted competition for Drew Locke. I think at that moment we almost figured out how the things were going to fall in the draft. Because I was talking to Chad about how I thought there might be one guy that falls. Because is Denver actually going to take anybody? Would it make sense for Carolina to take anybody? Because them, of course, getting Sam Darnold, and we've seen that they believe in Sam Darnold now because they didn't take a quarterback at all. Denver, same sort of thing. And then obviously the Bears traded up, but it seemed like the way that the cookie crumbled is that, yeah, the quarterback position mattered, but at the same time, these other teams that made these trades, they got what they wanted, and then they just tried to make their football team better around the quarterbacks who they had.
And that's the way you have to do it. You guys, you've heard me talk and say this before. The quarterback position is the single most dependent position on the field. If you don't believe that, ask Patrick Mahomes what it's like when you don't have both your tackles against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the Super Bowl. You run for your life. So, you know, when you look at the position, and this is Jacksonville, the Jets at that stage where they are, not San Francisco so much, even Atlanta a little bit, you know, the people that you add to help your football team. I mean, Minnesota invested in offensive linemen. Kansas City went out and got some offensive linemen. The offensive line, to me, is one of the most underappreciated groups of players on the field. If the quarterback gets sacked, they get criticized. If the quarterback is upright, nobody says anything good about him. And when I look at playoff teams, the first thing I look at is how many starts has the offensive line played together. Usually, if an offensive line has stayed together, they make the playoffs. So Washington was a classic example last year. They were sort of the unknown men on that football team. But yet they came together, played well down the stretch, and won a fair amount of football games. Won enough to get into the playoffs. Didn't matter what it was, but in a division where we're struggling, they got in. But the other thing, guys, I call this a relationship draft. You look at, the wide receiver from LSU and the running back, they go to Cincinnati where Joe Burrow is. Then you look at Miami, the receiver goes to where Tua is. Then you look at New England and Mac Jones being drafted, an Alabama quarterback. Of course, we all know Bill's relationship with Nick. So, it was a relationship draft to a degree. Guys that knew guys that they were going to add to their football team.
Joe, I want to ask you,
curve.
And I think you're spot on with that. And I always say you can't teach chemistry to a point. Now, if you have two equal guys, then go with the guy with the chemistry. If one guy is far and beyond better, then chemistry, throw it out the window. If you're 6'4", 230, get the ball over the top to him. But when you look at it, you've been in this situation before as an elite star coming out of Notre Dame, having the opportunity to then move on to the pros. When you see guys today, I feel like, just like in life, people are honking you at the drive-thru if you take more than 50 seconds, even though you're not making the food, or everybody wants an app for something. We can't even hit, for Pete's sake, we can't even hit the buttons anymore on a controller. We have to ask Alexa or Siri to find our station for us. I mean, that's what our world has come to. But at the same time, if you look at quarterbacks in the NFL, do you feel right now that we're at a point where we're rushing them in too quickly? Because you were there, and a guy like Trey Lance, it's only played a year and a couple snaps. Would he be ready to have that development to be able to start?
I think there's a lot of things for him to be able to learn, first of all. Would he be ready to start? You could put him out there. I don't think the results would be very good. You know, I mean, Tua struggled last year, came out of a great program. He struggled a bit last year. I felt like they pulled Fitz early. We have him now in Washington. But they wanted to get him on the football field, you know. And it isn't. See, the thing is it's a little bit different than it was a while back, because before we had the cap on rookies, you know, quarterbacks coming out were making a lot of money, and so you had to get the product out there because you invested a lot in it. Now with the cap at about $21 million, which is it's a big number, but not in the game of football, they can take their time with them. You know, they can take a look at a guy. They can get him to a 5th-year option. They can look at him over 3 years and decide whether they want to keep him, like they did in New York. And you know, I always wonder who the next Ryan Tannehill is going to be. And the reason I say that is, remember Miami when Ryan went there and he struggled his first couple of years. Everybody said, "Oh, the guy can't play. He's a bust." And all of a sudden he goes to Tennessee. They're a game away from winning the Super Bowl or going to the Super Bowl and had a really solid year this past year. So is Sam Darnold the next Ryan Tannehill? He's in Carolina. He's in a different environment, in a different system. Will he now be able to be the quarterback that people expected him to be? It's tough on young guys because there's a lot to learn. And unless you fall into the cradle of love like Ben Roethlisberger did with a great team around you and go to a Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl your rookie year, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, I think the thing with Tannehill, I think that works is that they're so reliant, or they know that Derrick Henry is so good and that offensive line is so good that they run that play action to perfection at times because Derrick Henry is so good that. That the defense has to respect you, and then you're able to run the play action off of that. And Tannehill is obviously a capable enough quarterback to make those throws. I mean, you look at how Minnesota kind of runs their offense as well. Kirk Cousins is a little bit more of a passer than Kellen Mond, the guy who they just took out of Texas A&M. But for them to have a guy like Dalvin Cook and a really good run game, I think the game has changed a little bit since I mean, there's more offenses that are throwing, more shotgun snaps. But in terms of how the game goes, I'd be curious to get your opinion on it, Joe. Do you think that the passing game is maybe as much reliant or even more reliant on the running game being good so that when you drop back to pass, the defense isn't, you know, blitzing three and dropping eight guys?
See, I think you need the running game to be good enough. Doesn't have to be great. It needs to be solid enough so that it does present an issue where you can play games with safeties. For example, if you can't run the football, you're not going to get a safety out of the middle of the football field. You're basically eliminating, you know, aspects of the game where you can throw the ball to. But if you're able to run the football and they have to bring safeties up for support, or they can block the edges, and this guy can get you 5-6 yards, like a Derrick Henry. Yeah, I think Tennessee relies on him so much that once you get into a game when you get behind, you can't throw. That's where you have to seek a balance, where you have to be able to have the ability to throw the ball. If you're down 14 points, you have to be able, 17, you have to be able to throw the football. If you're basically a running football team and you aren't able to throw the football, it's over. Guys aren't stupid. Players understand. So as long as the game is close, I can control it with the running game. But if they start putting points up on me, and you know, I'm going to run the football. Say I get the ball and I run, take 6-7 minutes off the clock, and I kick a field goal. The other team gets the ball, four plays are in the end zone. Well, my time of possession is like 8 minutes compared to their minute and a half, and I'm down 4 points. So the running part is essential, especially at the end of the game, when you really want to burn some time off the clock. They know you're going to run, and now can you line up and knock people off the ball? That's where the offensive line comes in, and that's where, you know, a guy like Derrick Henry or Najee Harris. I think, you know, Najee is going to help Pittsburgh tremendously. To me, there wasn't any other pick. If he was there, there wasn't any other pick that Pittsburgh should take him, and they did. That's what I was talking about before, is when I looked at this draft, as I look back at this draft and some of the players that went certain places, they fit needs, very, very big needs for football teams. Now, the expectation is that they'll be able to contribute.
Speaking with legendary quarterback Joe Theismann, kind enough to make time for us here today. Joe, I think we've talked about this before. Notre Dame had a great running game, good defense. But as a former Notre Dame quarterback, we have a lot of Saints fans in this area. What did you see when you saw Ian Book go number four in the fourth round, to the Saints?
Well, I sent Ian a text. I said, just as an FYI, I was a fourth round pick. So Joe Montana was a third-round pick. We know where Tom was. Tom was a sixth-round pick. As long as you get invited to the dance, that's the big thing, whether it's a free agent, whether it's a draft pick, no matter where you are. Fortunately, when you come in the middle rounds, the expectations are not as great as they are for, like, say Zach or Trevor or even Justin Fields or Trey. I mean, there's an expectation there from those guys. Now, how are those guys going to handle sitting down and not playing? That's another question you deal with. But I think in the case of Ian Book, he never really had a chance to show what his ability is to throw the ball down the field. Notre Dame ran the football a ton, played great defense. I mean, the fact that they had all of their offensive linemen got drafted, what does that tell you? I mean, that tells you a pretty good offensive line. And I'm pretty sure all of them went. And so... You know, Drew Brees was not a tall quarterback. So Sean Payton knows how to create an offense for a guy the size of his quarterbacks. I think Taysom Hill is still a Swiss Army knife. I don't know if, you know, you can line him up. And Jameis Winston, hopefully will find himself. He struggled a little bit when he went back into games. He was afraid, I think, to pull the trigger a little bit. But I still think there's an ability for him to be able to make an impact. But I think it was the right quarterback, again, going into the right situation. Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Sean Payton, three of the best play callers in the National Football League. I mean, they understand what they want to do. That's the way they call their games. They understand what they want. They understand who they have and the way they want to do it. But I think Ian has a chance to be able to really grow as a quarterback, again, because – Notre Dame ran the ball so well and with such effectiveness that they really didn't go down the field that much. You know, and Tommy Reese, their offensive coordinator at Notre Dame, really was in his first full year this year. So, you know, you had Ian in his last year, Tommy in his first full year, sort of finding your way to get, you know, get to the Final Four, which we did. And then hopefully on past it, but never worked out that way.
Joe, I know we've had these conversations. It would be midnight for all the questions I want to ask you, but I know your time is important. I always appreciate everything you can give us. I do want to end with this. This weekend, Cam Newton was out and about in the Kentucky Derby. The actual group who's in charge of all the attire, giving out the awards, stopped them and said, congratulations. And he said, guys, what are you talking about? I'm on the way to the grocery store. So, you know, you never know with the attire of people and what they're going to wear. But I think a lot of people sort of look like Cam Newton this week. Over, have you been to the Kentucky Derby?
I've been to Belmont, which isn't quite the same, but I have not been to the Kentucky. I have been to the Kentucky Derby. Yes. Many years ago when Governor Brown was there. I did go to the Kentucky Derby, and yes, you know, Cam looks like he's going to the Kentucky Derby every game.
It's every day, you know, to sleep. You're getting out of the shower. Yeah.
I mean, he makes a fashion statement every time he steps up and steps out, and you know, he enjoys it. He wears it well, and you know, I don't think I could pull off, you know, dressing.
I wouldn't want to see some of the ones. I don't know.
I was just going to say some of us shouldn't dress like that. But yeah, he does it. You know, it's fun. I mean, for crying out loud, people get so serious. Oh, how can you dress like that? Hey, good for him. You know, express yourself.
He's a good person too. He does so much behind the scenes.
And what a great place! What a great place to do it too. The Derby. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
it's fantastic. But so it'll be interesting. See, it's another one. I mean, we could go on just. We could talk quarterback positions on about half the teams in the league easily enough. But Cam, you know, I mean, Mac Jones is now going to wind up competing for a job up there in New England. Now, Cam got sat down twice last year. So, you know, who's going to be the quarterback there? It's going to be Cam Newton, I think, to start. But Mac Jones will have a chance now to be able to compete. Once again, not a pressure situation. You're going to a team that Bill's just loaded up. I mean, you talk about an offseason for the New England Patriots. They've loaded that defensive side of the ball like, you know, like they're going to the bank again. You know, missing the playoffs did not leave a pleasant taste in Bill's mouth, I can tell you that.
They were like the Trojan horse. They had a whole week where they just completely ransacked the NFL. It was like 9 picks. I'm from Boston, as we talked, and as a Patriot fan, I'm watching. And it was like every 5 seconds I'm getting the updates on my phone. They picked up, I think, 8 guys: Hunter Henry, Jonnu Smith, Nelson Aguilar, a couple, like you said, defensive guys up front, Kendrick Bourne.
Yeah.
It was like 7 or 8 guys in like a 24-hour period. So, yep.
And then keep in mind, I'm sorry to even interrupt, but keep in mind, one other thing, 9 players, I think, opted out last year.
Mm-hmm. Impact players, too, like Donta Hightower.
Yeah, Hightower, you know, I mean, you had, what, 6-7 starters that didn't play? I think they made some good choices. You know, they're always looking for, I think, the slot guy. I think Josh McDaniel really likes, you know, they like to get the ball inside. That's why they got Hunter Henry. So, you know, the offense isn't going to change that much. And plus, it sort of fits into what Cam does well. I mean, remember, Cam had Craig Olsen in Carolina. And they did had a great combination when they were down there. So, yeah, but I, you know, New England is, you know, restocked and loaded for bear.
Well, Joe, there's so many, like we said, we get to Kyle Trask on a whole show about him playing behind Tom Brady. We have a lot of Gator fans. There's so many things, but we appreciate all the time that you've given us here today. And like we said, no better to talk quarterback play than a quarterback that's been themselves in a situation in a draft to make an impact. So appreciate it, and I hope the golf game's going well as too.
It is, but listen, real quick, talking about Tampa Bay, Trask is in the perfect situation. Who would you want to learn from in the National Football League? You learn from the greatest that's ever played. You learn how to study, and that's one of the things Tom does that nobody talks about is his work ethic, his study habits, the way he takes care of his body, the way he prepares. I mean, we have Taylor Heineke here, and Taylor spent, you know, time with Tom. He said it was one of the most incredible experiences he's ever had in his life. to be around someone who is the consummate professional. So it's a great opportunity for the young man.
Absolutely. And I hated to see the end without his receivers, the guy sitting out the bowl game, because he had a historic season going. Joe Burrow numbers in the first 8-9 weeks of the season. And then guy throws a shoe. They lose to LSU. The next thing you know, four or five of his top receivers, two of them first-round picks, they sit out, and everybody thinks he's a bum. And I just – sometimes it's sad when you see that happen to a good kid.
Well, look at it this way. History has proven Tom can't go forever, but I think 6-7 years from now, as we start to think about Tom retiring, God will have his chance.
I'm 36. I might not be here to see Trask play, but Joe.
Hey guys, thank you.
Always great to catch up. Absolutely. Thank you for your time.